sometimes I'll just like bang out a draft and be revising that forever. And this time I'm trying something new, which is like, can it be more clean from the beginning?
This is Finding the Throughline, the show that gives you inside access to honest conversations about the creative process. I'm Kate Hanley. Welcome back to Finding the Throughline, my interview with Joanne McNeil, author of the novel Wrong Way and the nonfiction book Lurking, as well as a esteemed 20 years in tech critic. If this is the first you're hearing of Joanne, go back 2 episodes ago and hear her full bio, and then keep listening to find out the practical things that help Joanne do her work, including what's in her Trader Joe's bag when she goes on on a writing retreat, and some of the inner stuff that we covered in the most recent episode. Today, we're going to find out what's currently brewing for Joanne and what she knows at this moment about where her personal through line is leading her next. So, Joanne, what kinds of stuff is currently inspiring you, whether it's very recent or just in the last couple of months or so, but sort of new?
Oh, I am reading one book. I might be skipping ahead to
That's okay.
What I can't put down, but I will say that this incredible book that just was published in the UK by Granta called The Lodgers by Holly Pester is blowing my mind. And the only reason I'm putting it down is with regret because I've just been like crazy busy. But every time I pick it up, I'm just stunned by the language, stunned by this like acute representation of the housing crisis put in terms by this brilliant writer and poet who is, this is one of those books that is an event. And I'm like, everyone I talk to, I'm like, I haven't even finished this book, but I was like, you've got to read The Lodgers by Holly Pester. She's a genius. This is one of those books we are all waiting for. In terms of if you love literature, here is someone who is taking it to a new place and for a subject that many of us are struggling with and seeing beauty in, not beauty in the actual precarity, but like find those pieces of beauty that you can still pull out despite the hardship. I don't know. I can't do justice for how good this book is.
Okay, great. I can't wait. I'm going to share a link to it in the show notes, which will be on my Substack. And thanks for sharing that. It kind of relates to my next question, which is, who do you look to for like your creative role models?
I would say this is kind of a community. I mean, my two key authors, like in terms of influences from a very young age, it's J.G. Ballard and Philip K. Dick. I think Philip K. Dick, in terms of like the wild ideas, the precarity that he's not interested in the CEO's perspective so much as like the working class, the working stiffs. J.G. Ballard, because he could kind of look at a landscape of technology and man-made constructions and see the consequences and see the madness that kind of leads to that creation. Those are two writers that I go back to. I read their work thoroughly, I read their work closely, and I always gain something new from them. More broadly, I would say the landscape of the new wave of science fiction has always appealed to me as a moment in time where science fiction had gotten really rusty and conservative, and these new writers, Ursula Le Guin, Samuel Delaney, Octavia Butler among them, found that because it was working outside of the world of prestige, you weren't going to get a National Book Award if you wrote a sci-fi novel in 1972. That was just off the table. So what they did instead is they embraced their outsider status. They embraced the radicalism of the form and their influences. With someone like J.J. Ballard, he's influenced by someone like Burroughs. He's not necessarily listening to what Heinlein has to say or any of these like really militaristic, conservative, jingoistic pro-America voices. They were doing something weird, and that this was a moment that very diverse authors found their space in the science fiction world. I think a lot about this moment with a little bit of regret because this was a time when publishing science fiction was robust. You know, Joanna Russ, the female man, I think it sold like 500,000 copies. I mean, I don't know a writer today, except maybe the romanticy writers, who wouldn't envy hearing them. That's like The Female Man, really? The Dahlgren sold over 1 million copies. These books sold. They were, and I think about that too, in the possibility for an avant-garde to be accessible to the mainstream, which I don't really believe avant-garde, radical politics, any of that is outside the interests of someone who lives in a normal, allegedly normal suburban life. I think, in fact, like the kind of new forms that we're seeing on TV and A24 movies are showing that like people who aren't just kind of elite city dwellers are looking to be challenged by work. And so that's my long appreciation of the new wave moment. But I looked to those writers for a number of reasons, especially because they wanted that newness. And I would love to see some of that excitement come back, because I do think science fiction has gotten a little bit, maybe not conservative, but a little bit predictable.
What glimmers do you currently have of where your through line might be guiding you next?
I am working on a book right now that is very different from the last two. And so it's this, the second time this has happened to me, that when I put the last book away, I wanted to try something very new. And I wanted to write something that was very different than what I'd done before. And part of that, it feels almost like this, the things that I couldn't do in that format, because Wrong Way has a very specific structure, and there are things that I just could not do because of the structure. And with this new book that I'm working on, I'm building it out in a way that those elements can work here. So that's all I can really say right now.
Okay. That's exciting. And are there changes that you know that you're making, or things that you can sense that you need to shift?
Changes in my writing practice or
anything? I don't know. It could be anything.
I think one thing I'm trying to do is like giving myself a break for needing a break. I mean, I don't write every day, and I would have been really hesitant to say that before, because part of the reason my second book came out so quickly is because I was kind of writing them together at one point. I definitely began the draft for Right Wrong Way the day after I turned in the manuscript for Lurking.
Well,
this time around, however, I'm kind of embracing that sense of uncertainty that I have. I'm always kind of scribbling a few notes down, but the actual drafting I want to be a little bit more deliberate with. But on the other hand, like sometimes I'll just like bang out a draft and be revising that forever. And this time I'm trying something new, which is like, can it be more clean from the beginning? And who knows, maybe it won't work out. But I think at this stage where I'm at, I want to try a few different techniques for not getting that I can feel much more confident in my ability to write maybe late at night after I've had dinner with people, as opposed to like, oh, I can only write in the mornings because I haven't talked to anyone yet and I have like my mind clear. I want to kind of make sure that I'm not stuck in patterns that I can't break them in case like my life changes in a certain way.
And what's your grooviest idea of what the future holds for you personally? Like, what would just delight you?
I don't really have any far-fetched goals in that sense. I mean, the goals that I set for myself are pretty clear, that I just want to make writing part of my life throughout my life. And in various times and various climates, it's going to be difficult, and various times it might be easier than otherwise. And the thing I love about writing books is there is something about believing in a future just to have a manuscript, that you are working on it in the expectation that one day it will be finished. You are working on it and revising it, that one day it will be published and that it will be in the past and there will be a book after this. I mean, there is something about like being able to go back to lurking and see that maybe I wouldn't have written it the same way now because it's a different time. I have like a few more things I would have done differently if I were writing that book now. But seeing that it in some ways is a photograph of my life when I was writing it, that's another thing I love. I mean, that's, yeah, I don't know if that quite answers the question, but I do. That's the joy of writing to me, is that you are part of a process that has a past, a present, and a future.
Mm. Yes. All right. Well, we're going to shift gears a little bit. And I'm going to ask you a couple of quick, very specific questions. One, we talked about what you stayed up too late reading, but is there anything that you've watched recently that you just couldn't stop watching because it was so good?
Watch is a tricky one. I mostly just kind of like put on and don't really pay attention. But I will say another book that I definitely read, staying up until just could not put down, was Lori Moore's I'm Homeless If This Is Not My Home. I was stunned by that one. I didn't expect to be. I don't really know why I didn't expect to be, but I think I read it either, not on New Year's Day, but like January 2nd or something. And it was just like the perfect book to kind of begin a year with, because it seemed to be kind of out of time, that it came from someplace other than this moment we're in, while also feeling so incredibly relevant. I was stunned by that book.
Mm. Thanks for reminding me about it. Yeah, it's on my list, but I need to move it up to the top. What's your morning beverage of choice? I want specifics.
Oh, specifics. It really is as boring as coffee and milk. I love this coffee, Terra Nova, that is coming from this coffee shop in Keene, New Hampshire, the Terra Nova coffee shop. And I get the Red House blend, which is just my favorite.
Okay, fantastic. That's the level of specificity I was looking for. Thank you. What about, it's the middle of the afternoon, or I don't know when it is. It's sometime when you need a little shot in the arm. What song would you put on, or style of music?
Oh, I do have a song that always, you know, if I'm sad, it helps. If it cheers me up, it's Love and Anger by Kate Bush. This is just basically my favorite song.
Okay, awesome.
I can't listen to it too much or it loses power, but every once in a while, I'd say like several times a year, I will let myself enjoy that song. It means so much
to me.
Oh,
that is a special song that you don't want to listen to too much, lest it lose its power. I love that. And what is your favorite time? So it could be time of day, time of week, time of year. Just if you could place yourself anywhere in time, where would it be?
I do love autumns. I mean, it's different in California where I am now, because I'm just always thinking of the New England autumn, where it's the trees are changing colors and you can wear a sweater, but it's not yet cold. And it just always reminds me of walking to school in my new sweater and kilt and knee socks and beginning. It's a moment of beginnings, but also the spooky season of Halloween. I love autumns. I love a New England autumn.
Okay, great. And then what meal would you ask for if somebody said that they would either make you or order you absolutely anything that you want? So reality is not necessarily part of the equation here.
You know, it's funny because I can sometimes be a very picky eater and sometimes I'm just like completely lazy about it. I would say as a good wrap sandwich with like pesto and all this stuff, because just a like mozzarella pesto something, maybe some tofu in there. I don't know. I've never been able to make a wrap sandwich without it falling apart. So that's probably a boring answer, but it's like the most practical.
Listen, this is your ideal meal. Who is anyone to say whether it's boring or not? And then finally, is there anything that you're up to that you want listeners to know about or where they can come connect with you?
I have a newsletter that I sometimes offer recommendations for books and films that I've seen. And you can go to my website, joannmcneil.com, and find it.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being here, Joanne. And thank everybody out there for listening. We'll be back next week when I will ask a new writer mildly invasive questions about their creative process and their personal through lines. Thanks, everyone, and have a great weekend. Finding the Throughline airs one interview per week, broken up into three episodes that come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free. Skip the ads and get each interview in one longer episode by becoming a paid subscriber at katehanley.substack.com. Even if you aren't ready to get out your wallet just yet, become a free subscriber at katehanley.substack.com and receive the full show notes with links to everything my guests and I cover. However you listen, thank you. Finding the Throughline is edited by Sound Advice Strategies. Connect with me on Instagram at katehanleyauthor. And come back next Monday when I'm having a conversation about the creative process with an entirely new person. Until then, wishing you a great weekend.